Welcome to First Turn, where we play board games for the first time and discuss our immediate reactions. I'm Eric, and with me is Kiwi and BP.
Hello.
Hi.
Today we're going to be playing Skull, formerly known as Skull and Roses. The designer is Hervé Marley, artist Rose Kippick, and Thomas Barchet. The publisher is Asmodee. It won French Game of the Year in 2011. The original description from Skull and Roses in 2011 was, traditionally, biker gangs chose their leaders through a merciless contest called Back on the Pavement, which consisted of seeing who could last the longest while dragged behind a heavy cylinder without spilling his beer. The sorry state of their leather after such trials caused some of them to look for a cheaper alternative, however. It's during the regular meetings at their favorite bar, the Skull and Roses, that the more Machiavellian bikers created a fearsome game of bluff, which is still used to this day to choose their supreme leader.
I think it's classy, I just want to say, that they tried to do that without spilling their beer.
I mean, I've watched a lot of Sons of Anarchy. This is not how they chose their president.
Do gangs have presidents?
Biker gangs do.
Oh, it's very democratic of them.
I mean, I don't think they necessarily always vote.
Fixed elections.
The description from the current rulebook is excerpt from the Journal of Joseph, the author's adventuring great-grandfather. August 12th, 1921, we finally reached the port of San Francisco, the last leg of our trip around the world. Our souls enriched by the encounters we've had and our hold filled with wonderful gifts offered by the people who have welcomed us. Among those relics is a surprising collection of flowers with a heady perfume accompanied by beautifully decorated skulls used for the worship of ancestors. During our travels, their fascinating presence has opened my mind, which is sometimes overly rational, to the rules of a captivating traditional game, the Game of Skulls. A surprising mix of bluff and strategy in which it is said that whoever disturbs the rest of our ancestors by revealing their skulls will immediately lose one of their lives. Impelled by a mysterious force, I've immediately represented these skulls and flowers on a series of cardboard cards and transcribed the rules. We've practiced the game quite a lot and have discovered the delight, the subtleties which were required to become the winner. From the port, the use of the game spread like wildfire among all the adventurers of the West Coast. A few years ago, the game was rediscovered by some biker gangs and renamed Skull and Roses. As a homage to their author's adventurous ancestors, here's a new edition inspired by the strange beauty of the original game.
So when I was reading this and typing this, all I could think was, California, heady perfume opened his mind. He found weed. And this is a game he came up in his drug-infused stupor.
I mean, it is dark. This other one is much darker, I feel like, than the just rambunctious bikers trying not to spill their beer.
While being dragged behind his heavy cylinder.
Well, yeah. Sure, that's...
Which, again, going back to my Sons of Anarchy knowledge, heavy cylinder is a large motorcycle.
Oh.
So they were dragged behind a large motorcycle and had to not spill their beer.
Why wouldn't they just say motorcycle?
Because cylinder sounds cooler.
Does it?
Well, and it sounds cool that you're trying not to spill your beer, as opposed to if you, what was it, lose your skulls, you lose your life?
Yeah.
I mean, that's hardcore, man.
Yeah, but I feel like they did the whole, hey, we're going to drag somebody on the pavement with a heavy cylinder. And they're like, oh, that sounds dark. Better say without spilling his beer.
Yeah. Well, also, I'm confused where the connection is between, like, this backstory of ancestors and skulls and then biker gangs. Like, that just, it seems like a weird...
I think tying it all together, the premise of this very meta backstory description of a game is that there was this ancient tradition that the biker gang discovered and also used. But this other guy also discovered it. It had to have been before because there weren't biker. Were there biker gangs in 1921?
I think biker gangs kind of picked up after the Second World War when motorcycles got really big.
Yeah, that would make sense after they saw Indiana Jones.
I mean, before. I feel like biker gangs were before Indiana Jones. I don't think any of it's true. I just want to throw this out here. you guys are treating it like, oh, he discovered this in his great grandfather's adventuring journal. Like,
don't let facts get in the way of a good story.
I think it's made up.
If you're going to write a story, I'm going to find the plot holes
to support the theme.
It's just a very intense way to go about it.
Exactly.
I also it like that that was the longest description of a game that we have, and it's the game we've played with the least amount of components.
Yeah. It just makes me wonder what they're going for. Like, the first one, it seemed like, okay, cool, we're Guns N' Roses, Sons of Anarchy, like, okay, cool. But then with the other backstory, it's like, I don't understand.
Well, the two editions also have very different art style.
Oh.
Yeah, let's go to the mechanics and the box art, and then we'll see if that enlightens us. So the mechanics are auction bidding, hand management, and player elimination. The box art is a skull.
Yeah, so this box art is the second edition. So this is the version that Asmodee. So it's got a very, like, Day of the Dead type art style to it. So now imagine Day of the Dead, and then go back to the description. Again, they don't at all match.
So the first one, or the newer version that has the craziness, like, I don't understand now, thinking if it's supposed to be kind of Day of the Dead, why add the bikers in at all? But now it makes sense more because, right, Day of the Dead is a day of honoring your ancestors and making connections.
Yeah, I think that all makes sense. And then I think they just had to retcon. They tried to keep continuity in their story, so they retconned in the biker gang because they'd already written that in the previous version.
This is the original Skull and Roses art,
which is very bike gangy.
Yeah, so for those who...
It's a new adjective.
Due to this being an audio-only medium, imagine like old-school tattoo parlor, like the type of art that you would see in a tattoo parlor.
Lots of skulls, lots of roses.
Yeah. And then just that kind of tattoo art style, which, I mean, tattoos can be any art style. But when you think tattoo, like classic roses and all that stuff, I think this is what, this is what people will probably imagine.
Yeah, like 1970s, 1980s, biker gangs.
Yeah.
Hold on. I want a game with a gang of bakers.
Yes. Okay. That will have to be a total different subplot, different podcast, but I agree with that too.
That was the original art style, and then...
And then now we have this more Dios de los Muertos.
Yeah, but then, like, some of the flowers, like the roses, actually remind me more of, like, a Japanese art style that you might see
but
on,
if you
like...
look at the top of the cards, do have that more kind of Mesoamerican... style of art, where it's, how to describe it, right, there's lines and patterns that are more resemblance of nature versus just the roses with, like, a, you know, skull with a snake between its teeth kind of idea.
Yeah,
I think they clearly tried to rebrand this, but somebody was really attached to the old brand and they just tried to work it in there.
Yeah,
that's Scotch tape it together.
Yeah, I think it was because like on that same page where it has that whole description, there is a when it gets to the a few years ago, the game was rediscovered by some biker gangs and renamed Skull and Rose. There's an asterisk. And then the asterisk is at the bottom of the page. It says, for the experts, the rules are identical to Skull and Roses. Happy reading to new players. There are no other changes except for the art and the background theme description.
Gotcha. So based on that, would you pick this box up off of a shelf?
Wait, now, based on the original story or the new story, the original art or the new art?
Either. We'll go with both.
I don't think I would pick up this box, but I think I would have picked up the other box.
Me too. Like, I like the original story.
I actually enjoy this box. I mean, it's interesting. If you read that description to me, I would say play this game now, because I have to see if they came up with that description. I have to see what they came up with for a game.
The second edition one?
Yeah. Or the first. Honestly, either.
Too bad it's not a Baker's gang yet, though.
Yeah.
It's the next version. They're just going to rebrand it with Baker's.
Yeah.
Baker's gang trying not to spill their yeast.
Okay, do the rules.
Okay, so every player is going to get a pack of cards. Your pack of cards is four cards. It's three roses and one skull. They actually look more like beer coasters, to be honest. I think this is meant to be like a pub game. So the goal of the game is to win two bets. So on the very first turn, everybody's going to look at their cards and they're going to play one face down in front of them. You have so your cards are circular coasters and then everybody has a square coaster. On one side it says skull, on the other side it says roses. So everyone's going to be skull side up. So that's where you're going to play your cards. And then once it gets back around to the player who laid their card down first, every player has two options, basically. They can either lay down a card or they can make a challenge. So for the challenge, they're just going to say how many cards they think they can flip over and not flip over a skull. So you'll make a challenge. You'll say, I can flip over three. And then it'll go around the table and you and the other players can either pass or they have to one up that challenge. So if I say I can flip over three, Eric, you can either pass or say I can flip over four. And then BP will go to you and you either say pass or say I can flip over five. You can never say that you'll flip over more cards that are on the table. That makes sense. And then once everybody has passed, the player who has bid the highest has to reveal the cards. So they're going to start with all the cards in front of them first. So you have to reveal all the cards in front of you. And then the interesting part is then you can choose the order in which you flip the other cards. So once I'm done flipping all the cards over in front of me, I could flip over one of BP's. And then I can flip over one of Eric's. And as long as I don't draw a skull in the number that I said I would draw, then I win my bet and I would flip my square coaster over to roses. And the goal of the game is I just have to win two bets. If you flip over a skull, you're going to lose one of your cards. So if I flip over a skull in front of me, I get to choose the card that I lose. If I flip over a card in front of somebody else, I'm going to fan out my cards and they're going to randomly choose which one I lose. But nobody gets to know except for me, because I'll be able to look at the rest of my hand, what card I lost. So there's potential that you could lose your skull. So once you draw a skull, you don't draw anymore. So that way, you know, if Eric has four cards down, I have four cards down, BP has three. If I go through all of mine, I would pick a skull. So that was a bad example. But say it was 3, 3, and 2. And I flip over all of mine. They're all roses. And I flip over Eric's first one and it's a skull. We don't flip over any more of Eric so that people don't see like strategy. Although you're going to know it's skulls or roses. So if you lose all your cards, you're out of the game. So there's player elimination as well. So you can also win by being the last player. And that's it. That's all the rules. Have you guys ever played Liar's Dice?
Nope.
No.
Okay. This is essentially just a different take on Liar's Dice, if you guys had played it before. But you haven't, so it doesn't matter. Moving on.
It still sounds kind of like a good, fun pub game now.
Yeah.
Just going to throw that out there. I think the whole Bikers theme works better.
Yes. I feel like that was originally the design that they were going for. And I would venture to guess that that is the reason why they went a different route, because they didn't want it associated with alcohol.
Interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I didn't read that anywhere. That's just a guess on my part. Knowing how like people try to brand themselves, and especially with Asmodee being a real big like.
Yeah, it's true. Well, we should try it out and talk about it after. So
let's play.
We just completed a couple games of Skull. To recap, we played two games. Kiwi won the first one very quickly. And then in the second game, Eric won a bet, Kiwi won two, Kiwi lost a card, and BP lost two cards, which adds up to Kiwi winning the second game also. I think he was trying to throw us a bone in the description. So what'd you think?
I think it needs more players.
Well, until you had read that bit about how they did not recommend playing with just three players, I don't know that I would have thought about having more players, but it definitely kind of feels like it needs a little more something. I mean, I think both Eric and I were a little disappointed after the first round, which, I mean, when we say quick, was like less than 5 minutes, I think.
Yeah, it was very fast.
And it was just like, that's it. Like, this wasn't very fun at all. I think the second round, we all tried to be a little bit more maybe aggressive in our betting, or at least try to play that mechanic up a little bit more, which did make it more interesting. And you two really tried, I think, that strategy of turning your cards over and playing blindly.
I don't know if
it was
so much of a strategy or just like just to see what would happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. I kept all my cards upside down and then just played them. And it really did no impact on my gameplay, which I think says a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the bet that won me the game, I did the same thing and flipped over both cards in front of me, and they both just happened to be roses, and I had my skull available.
Actually, yeah, we both won the rounds that we played blindly.
Yeah.
On the note of the player count, I think this goes to something I think I heard mentioned on the Dice Tower, which is if you have to put in the rule book, hey, don't play this with three games or three players, don't put three players on the box.
Right.
Yeah.
Don't call it a three to whatever player game if three player doesn't work.
Right. Like if you prefer that it's going to be better with, I mean, it does say five to or three to six, best five to six. But I think, again, right, if you're like three is going to, I think they said too tactical.
Yeah. Very tactical.
Yeah. Then make it a
four
plus player game.
I don't know that tactical is the word we would use.
Yeah. No, I feel like it's a drinking game.
I could see that they were trying to do like, I mean, you guys haven't played Liar's Dice, but they seemed to try and do something different than Liar's Dice. That was because with Liar's Dice, if we were playing that, we would need three cups and 15 dice to play Liar's Dice. So like the amount of stuff that you need to do it is a lot. And then if you're carrying around, enough for six people to play, now you've got 30 dice and six cups. Whereas this, you could play this with a deck of cards. They don't have to be coasters. And then at that point, you only need 24 cards. I mean, you could fit that in your wallet almost. So they're trying to do something different. I think the difference is they just do it with cards.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And like the way the game was themed initially and the fact that, they look exactly like beer coasters, mm-hmm. like the theme that they were going for was spilling beer, the initial theme. Like it definitely seemed like they were trying to take Liar's Dice and take the dice out of it.
To go to the theme, like based on the box art and the theme in the description, it doesn't come off as a drinking game.
The theme that's on the current edition, correct.
The current edition and the description and all that really doesn't come off to me like a drinking game. Like if you pick that up off a shelf, I wouldn't go, I need to play this in a bar.
Right. But again, when you're, and I guess maybe it's because we had read the other description and looked at the other description. I mean, that's immediately, I think, where it would be fun. You have a table of people who are also kind of drinking along with it.
I'd rather take Welcome To and put fun drinking rules to it. Then you get to play a fun game and drink. I've never been one for drinking games anyway, so maybe the target audience.
Yeah, I just feel like the theme of the original and just the way the game looks, like that's what I feel like that they were trying to accomplish.
But then they moved away from that in their newest edition.
Like, yes.
Why wouldn't they just, if they wanted to update it, just kind of double down on that and give it some fun?
And then it goes right back to, I think they were trying to distance themselves from it being a alcohol drinking game.
Yeah, but then how are you going to give the impression that it's a drinking game? I mean, you could retheme it to anything because the theme had nothing to do with the game.
Yep.
Yeah.
I don't know how, I think it should be conveyed in some way that this is, only fun if you're drunk, I guess.
Well, and I think we knew there was going to be issues with the way that the theme fit in just at the beginning and trying to figure out how the art and the stories worked, which is a good segue to the next question.
So what did you think of the art?
I like the art for the first edition better. I just like the style, like that cool old school tattoo style. I mean, there's nothing wrong with the new art.
I mean, the new art is very Dios de los Muertos, which I think is cool. The old art was cool as well. If anybody is familiar with the McMinimum's pub system, if you will, up in Oregon, it's a brew pub. McMinimum's, they're all over the state of Oregon. But all of their pubs have this really kind of specific style of art that reminds me a little bit of the original artwork. But I mean, both of them, I mean, are cool art. But again, it's what story are you going for? And I think the Dios de los Muertos theme doesn't really...
Well, and then it's like, when you look at the art, it's not even just that, though. Like, you know, one of them does match that Day of the Dead theme. But then another one, like, that's clearly Japanese. Like, that's a samurai helmet on top of a skull with what I would venture to guess is, I don't know the name of the flower, but I...
Yeah. It's a lotus.
Yeah, lotus flower. So very Japanese. This one here, the blue one, is that's Maori for sure, with the tattoos and the face tattoos.
I like the art a lot in this one. I like this more so than the biker art of the original one in terms of just pure art. Like, I love like the flowers and the designs. But yeah, it doesn't fit this game at all.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, no. Like, I remember when Kiwi flipped over one of his cards, I was like, oh, you have a thistle. Like,
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it's cool, but yeah, again.
Yeah, it just doesn't fit. Like, it's great art, but I mean, you can't just have some cool art and throw it on a game and call it a day. Unless that was supposed to fit in with the traveling the world part of the theme, but that's a stretch.
Yeah, I mean, maybe if they were all, like, all six decks were themed the same, but they're all very clearly different regions of the world.
I mean, if they were going with like, we've traveled the world and these are the skulls we've collected.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what it was going to go with, but just didn't come out in the story at the beginning.
Yeah.
So what'd you think of the mechanics? I'm going to say hand management seems like a little bit of a stretch.
Yeah. Hand management definitely does seem like a stretch. I mean, you've got that one card. So you're trying to manage where that is, I mean, I brought up Liar's Dice because when I read the rules, like, that's immediately what I thought of. And if I had to choose between this and a classic game of Liar's Dice, like, I would go with Liar's Dice. I think the way the mechanics go in that game is much different, and the mechanics work when you put them into that particular rule set. I don't think that the rule set and the mechanics worked for, you know, four cards. Maybe if there were more cards and you had additional skulls, so you had more than one skull, and maybe it wasn't, hey, if you win on bets, you win the game. It's if you lose all your skulls, you're out, and whoever's last is the winner.
Yeah, when you had originally read the rules and the mechanics, I had kind of gone with thinking more like a poker game. So maybe, like Kiwi suggested, if there were more cards,
yeah,
then I feel like the mechanics and the description would have fit it better.
So, fun factor.
Yeah. I didn't enjoy it.
I was really excited at the reading the rules and the mechanics, and again, thinking it would be like this betting bluff game, and it was going to be super interactive. And again, I think I said this at the beginning of the discussion portion. I think Eric and I, at the end of the first round, were both like, that was it. Like, I think until you suggested, shall we play it again? Like, I was like, this was lame.
And did you keep that same thing going after we played the second one?
I mean, it got a little bit more fun, but it was still kind of just, yeah, meh.
See, I got excited about it because I'm going through the backlog of the Shut Up and Sit Down podcast. And there were like three or four episodes where they mentioned Skull and how much they really enjoyed and loved Skull.
Are we doing shout outs again?
Oh, are we? Yeah. Shout out to Shut Up and Sit Down. You guys are awesome.
We've heard it from a couple different sources that this was a fun time. And we've been kind of looking forward to games with sort of a bluffing mechanic, just out of curiosity. So I was pretty excited to see what all it had. And I wouldn't say we did much bluffing really directly. It was just sort of, Like I said, we played a couple hands blind, so I'm just and it really didn't seem any different than the ones we didn't play blind.
Yeah, I wonder if this is like, you know, one of those games where it's just like it doesn't really work for our group because like
I would agree.
Yeah, we haven't played a lot of bluffing games, so I wonder if that's part of it or if like it's just not our style of game.
And that can be the case in any game that we were not into, and it definitely could with this one. I don't know that we don't do a lot of bluffing and deceit stuff with like strategy games that can include that piece in it. So leading into the next one, if I were at a bar and I was bored and somebody brought this out, I would play it, but I would also probably leave the bar and go do something fun.
I was just thinking that when you said if I was at the bar and someone brought it out, I'd be like, I'd go to the bar and maybe get another drink and not come back.
Yeah. I was also thinking like I might play this in a bar if somebody else brought it out, but I don't find myself in bars very often.
There's that too.
Like there was a point when I lived in DC and we would go drinking and stuff and I'd just be really bored at the bar because I went with my friends and I don't talk to humans. But like I wouldn't do that anymore. If I were at a bar and my friends were doing other things and I was bored, I would leave.
Yeah, I just maybe again, you know, Kiwi and I being old married couple, like I definitely would have gone to bars earlier in my life and played games, so I may have done that at this time, but yeah, now it's just like it's not fun enough to entertain myself and I don't drink enough to find it entertaining.
Yeah, I've discovered there's like really fun and cool stuff in the world that I'm not gonna waste my time.
I'm with you on that one.
So I think that's unanimous. We would definitely not play it again.
We would just walk out of the bar.
There's a situation somehow in this universe that I would play it again. I just can't think of it right now.
Up next, we're going to be playing Sheriff of Nottingham, designed by Sergio Haliban and Andre Zatz. Their other known game is Quartz, and then they've done a lot of work in Portuguese games. It's developed by Brian Pope of Mage Wars. The art is by Lorraine Schletter of Dominion Mage Wars and David Slotik. It's published by Arcane Wonders, and it is the first game in the Dice Towers Essentials line. The game description is, Prince John's lust for gold has finally gone too far. It's impossible for a merchant to make a living anymore. Being taxed as much as we are, now he's got the greedy Sheriff of Nottingham checking everyone who comes to the front gate for contraband, meaning all the good stuff he's trying to keep for himself. Good thing you know the Sheriff better than Prince John does. That shifty, no-good, greedy fellow might be intimidating when he stands in front of the city gate, but let's be honest, he's not above taking a well-placed bribe to look the other way. You have come to Nottingham with your goods on market day, and the only thing standing between you and your hard-earned profits is the sheriff. All you need to do is bluff or bribe your way past him, or maybe tell the truth. In Sheriff of Nottingham, you are a merchant trying to deliver your goods to market. Players take the turns assuming the role of sheriff, who must decide which merchant's bag to inspect and who to let by. As a merchant, your goal is to convince the sheriff to let you in, by any means necessary. At the end of the game, the merchant with the most wealth wins. The mechanics are card drafting, hand management, role-playing, and set collection. And the box art is of a very angry-looking, fluffy medieval guy.
Okay, so first of all, he does not really look angry. He's
perturbed?
Sure.
Yeah, I was trying to think of a word, but couldn't come up with anything.
Large, yes. And his dress, a little more on the Renaissance side, but whatever.
All right, so based on the box in the description, would you pull this off the shelf?
I would, but every time I hear the name and I see the box, I just think of Alan Rickman and the scenes in Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves.
That makes me want to pick it up even more.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, yes, one, the mechanics sound really fun, the whole idea of, like, bribe or bluff your way. Just sounds unique and interesting, and it's based on a medieval theme, so I'm all in.
It's interesting that bluffing isn't a mechanic.
Yeah, but it's definitely a key part of the game, so we'll see. And I think I have pulled it off the shelf and looked at it, but I think I put it back because it's not a two-player game. It's a three-player or more, so...
Yeah. Our history lesson?
Yeah, so since I had said it was medieval themed, so... First of all, I have to do a shout out to Myths and Legends podcast.
Shout out!
Because they are coming out with an upcoming episode on Robin Hood. So I'm super stoked about that. Obviously, though, Robin Hood is one of those themes that, of course, Sheriff of Nottingham is associated with that, as you guys just pointed out with your Prince of Thieves, like is super, right, still today, very popular in culture. And a cultural icon. I, of course, went the Disney version, which the Sheriff of Nottingham is then portrayed as a wolf, but still gets that idea of like the greedy, thirsty, bloodlusting kind of image. But when we actually think about Robin Hood and even Sheriff of Nottingham, it's unclear whether they were really based on any sort of actual person or persons. And so I'm interested to see what the Weisses do with the history of those legends, because most of them don't really start to become popular, kind of like with the Arthurian legends, until the 14th and 15th centuries. But the idea of a sheriff itself and the role that Forrest played within medieval government, and the idea of the real King John, who did raise a lot of taxes because, of course, England was fighting with France, because that's what happens when the King of England is also the vassal to the King of France, but actually controls more land in what is now modern day France than the King of France did. Anyway, there's a lot of actual evidence for what the role of the sheriff would have been. It would have been more of a civil kind of bureaucratic position that would have then been in charge of tax collecting. So in this essence, right, the legend kind of harps on that. It's not our kind of idea of a sheriff that's more law enforcement. In addition, this whole idea of forests does also pop up in the Magna Carta and is one of the ways that the barons try to limit how much land and territory the king can actually take. And so you do have the portrayal of King John being, of course, greedy because he had a war that he was trying to fight. But definitely in the themes, he is taken to the extreme. Yeah, there you go. It's a very fun period of time that still completely fascinates us today. There was just a movie that came out, what, 2018?
Yeah, with Taron Egerton and Jamie Foxx.
Yeah, and there was that BBC TV series about a decade ago where Maid Marian wore pants all the time, which... ridiculous, because women in the medieval period did not wear pants. In fact, men really didn't even wear pants, but that's, again...
Well, they're so restrictive.
Yeah.
They wore tights. I learned that in a historical document called Robin Hood Men in Tights.
Ah, indeed. Also a classic Robin Hood movie.
Right. There you go. There's your history lesson today.
Nice.
All right. How about some rules?
All right. Okay, so the game is played in rounds. In each round, a different player is going to take the role of the sheriff, and the game goes until everybody has been the sheriff twice, except in a three-player game where everybody gets to be the sheriff three times. So essentially, you're going to play 9 rounds as a minimum, or 8 rounds as a minimum if you're playing a four-player game, 9 rounds if you're playing a three-player game. So each round is broken into 5 phases. And the sheriff is only going to take part in the 4th and 5th phase. So on a player's turn, they're going to do the market phase. So in player order, everyone's going to have a hand of 6 cards. You can set aside up to 5 cards in your hand, and then you can take from, there's 2 discard piles and 1 draw pile. So your hand is good. So you've got legal goods and contraband. So you can discard up to 5, and then you're going to draw back up to 6. Once every player has done that, then all the players at the same time are going to load their merchant bag. So in your merchant bag, you can put 1 to 5 cards, and you can put anything you want in there. And then once everybody's done that and they've closed up their bag, then we go into phase 3 with this declaration. So at this point, the players are going to tell the sheriff what goods they have in their merchant bag. There are 3 conditions. So you can only declare legal goods. So in the game, there's cards with green backgrounds and one with red backgrounds. The green backgrounds are legal goods. The red backgrounds are contraband. So you can only declare legal goods. You can only declare one kind of good. So if you have, you know, 2 chickens and 1 cheese, you can't say, I have 2 chickens and 1 cheese. You can say, I have 3 chickens. Because the other rule is you must declare the exact number of cards in your bag. So if you, again, back to 2 chickens and 1 cheese, you can say, I have 3 cheese or I have 3 chickens. So you have to say the number of that are in the bag. And then the sheriff gets to decide whether or not they want to look in the merchant bag. So they can threaten the bag owners. They can take bribes. Bribes can be gold, legal goods that are in a player's merchant stand, contraband. They can offer up goods that are in the bag, or they can even make promises for future favors. There is a rule in the game called honor amongst thieves. So if you make some sort of bribe or some sort of deal, if it is still in the same phase, you have to honor the deal. But if I say, like, Eric, if you don't look in my merchant bag this time around, I won't look in your merchant bag next turn. But since it's a future favor and not the same round, I don't actually have to honor that favor. And the rule book also says if you offer goods from your merchant bag and those goods aren't actually in your merchant bag, you don't have to give them anything. So you could lie about the bribe as well. And so then if the sheriff doesn't want to inspect your bag, he just hands it back to you without looking in it. But if he wants to inspect it, then he pulls out the cards. So 2 things can happen. If the merchant was 100% truthful, then the sheriff has to pay from his gold the penalty that's on the card to the player. If the player lied, then any legal goods they announced get to go to their merchant stand. Everything else is confiscated and put in the discard pile. So like the example with the 2 chickens and the cheese, if I said I have 2 chickens, or if I said I have 3 chickens and Eric inspects my bag, I would get to place my 2 chickens in my merchant stand, but then I would have to pay Eric the penalty because I lied about the cheese. And then that's the end of the round. So at the end of the round, once everybody has gone through, the sheriff gets passed to the player on the left and the new round starts. If everybody has been the sheriff for the exact number of times, then you add up all the points on their cards in the merchant stand, plus your gold and then any bonus points. So you can be the king of cheese. If you have the most cheese out of anybody, you get extra points for being the king of cheese, which honestly is exciting. And then the player with the most points wins. And then them's the rules. And every time I think about bringing contraband, I go right back to Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, when they're going in to see the execution of Will Scarlet and some of the other merry men. And there's a guy at the thing going, no blades, no bows, leave your weapons here. No blades, no bows, leave your weapons here. It's great.
Was that Prince of Thieves or Men in Tights?
No, that was Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves.
Like the Prince of Thieves has so many moments that could have been in the satire of the Prince of Thieves.
Men in Tights was basically just a direct spoof of Prince of Thieves.
It was, but sometimes it's hard to tell which was which.
I don't think I've seen either.
What?
Shall we play?
We have completed a game of Sheriff of Nottingham. The results were Eric was the fondue lord and had the most money with and 154 points. BP was the chief smuggler and completed with only 79 points. And Kiwi won the day with 150 points after becoming the apple and chicken baron. So what'd you think of the game?
I had a lot of fun.
I also loved it.
Yeah.
Even though I lost, but we can talk about that more later.
BP tried really hard. Mm-hmm. Like you said, she was smuggling every round.
There was one round I did not.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And that was obviously the one round that you were honest. You actually started that round and said, I have to go legit. And Eric still looked in your bag.
Yeah. I will say, though, that if you can tell by the points, smuggling may not always pay off.
If you do it right. But yeah, Kiwi is pretty legit. I think he only tried to smuggle once and he got it through, right?
I tried to smuggle a couple times. Okay. I only got one through, yeah.
And I was kind of half and half. I had one time where I got two through, but otherwise I never... these two are very untrustworthy, I'll just say.
I was trying to run a legitimate apple and chicken farm.
That was a lie. You used that fondue lie the whole time and you never had cheese.
I had a couple of cheese.
You
I
finished with the least cheese.
No, I had second okay. for cheese.
Yeah, I think that's one thing I did not realize going into it is how much trying to focus on one of those items to get one of those lead spot on the items was actually worth.
Yeah, the lead spots are very valuable. A little more than I was also expecting. I mean, I could have looked at the card, but I didn't.
Same. I mean, and I had so much contraband in my hand and I just kept thinking, you want to smuggle in contraband. So like, I did not change out my hand as often as I think I could have because I was like,
what do you think some of that contraband is not worth quite as much? Like I got crossbows through, which are worth 9, which is a lot. But I feel like some of the other contraband was for the effort of getting it through is not could be a little higher in the points.
Yeah, right? Like the pepper.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think like because some of the contraband, like if you're we played with the Royal Goods, which is technically like a little mini expansion sort of that come in the box. And I think only a couple of them came up. Eric had the chicken one, and I had discarded the apple one.
I had an apple one.
Oh, and you had an apple one?
Mm-hmm.
That chicken one would have won me the game, though.
Yeah, the chicken one would have won on the game for sure. But yeah, so like maybe those are a little bit more worth it because they're worth 2 when it comes to the number of like apples or chickens or cheese.
Right.
But it's still contraband, so you have to like sneak it in.
I struggled when I was sheriff the most either trying to take bribes because I was short on gold because I was bribing all the time because of my contraband or calling people who had legit things and having to pay. So I think like I just did really bad at the sheriff. Like I think if I'd never had to be the sheriff, then I probably would have done a lot better.
So what did you think of the theme?
I thought it fit really well.
Yeah, I think it was fantastic.
Yeah,
it's really good. And I think you could tell that by how much we just played it up the roles and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
It all clicked.
The Australian accent that Kiwi kept busting out.
Well, I thought that the role playing is listed as a mechanism.
Yeah.
But like nowhere in the rules does it say.
Oh, I didn't even know it was listed as a mechanism. Yeah, I thought so we just did it because we were having fun.
Yeah, because like bluffing is listed as a category on BoardGameGeek. And it's not at all a mechanism.
Mm.
But then like role playing is listed as a mechanism. But there's nowhere in the rules does it say anything about role playing.
Yeah.
Like we just sort of like took it and ran with it.
Yeah. And I think it naturally happens in this game. That's probably why I got thrown on the list of mechanisms and stuff. But
yeah,
it just seems to happen. Like, how can you not?
Yeah, exactly.
How can you not try to bring out a British accent?
Yeah. What's all this in? What? Hey, what?
Or make chicken noises to prove you have chickens in your cart.
Yeah.
What about the art?
That was fun.
Yeah.
Like cartoony. Yeah.
Yeah, it's okay.
It was easy to read and it was clear. I feel like the rest of the game was so interactive and so engaging that it didn't need to have fantastic art, but it didn't have bad art. Like, I mean, Raccoon Tycoon, like the same way as with the art there, where There's so much goodness going on in the game that the art doesn't break or make the game, if that makes sense. And I feel like that's the same with the art here.
Yeah, it kind of plays a background role. It's there. It's functional. It does a good job, but mm-hmm. it's not center stage, which I think is fine in this game because it's more interactive.
Yep.
Yeah. I feel like for a good game, that's really what you want. You don't want the art to outshine.
I think it depends on the type of game, because like a game where you're in your cards the whole game because it's more, you know, mm-hmm. you're focused on your strategy, you're looking at your cards, then yeah, some good art, I think.
Like Dominion or something.
Exactly. But in a more, actually even not as much Dominion, but like when we played Seven Wonders, like you're staring at your stuff the whole time. It'd be nice if there was some cool art. Whereas like this one, you're looking at each other more and it's more mm-hmm. interactive. So you're not really focused on the components as much. Mm-hmm. So I think it kind of depends on the game. And I think this fit perfectly with what it was going for. What about the mechanics? We kind of discussed them already, but how did we feel about bluffing in this game compared to, let's say, Skull?
This was just so much more. I mean, just center stage and there was so much more wiggle room. Like the last round, when I was sheriff, the very last hand, like I totally thought Kiwi was bluffing, that he was just, you know, I mean, who wouldn't be trying to smuggle in contraband on the absolute last round? And, you know, he was just, no, go ahead, check my bag. Like, I don't know. I think there was a lot more opportunity for it. And I think that's fun because that's not, I think, a mechanic we enter into very often in games. And it's just the interactive piece of it. It's great.
You know what? If you hadn't checked my bag at the end, I would have had 150 points and Eric would have won.
Yeah, I told you. She handed him the game at the end.
Yeah, but she definitely didn't do it on purpose.
Yep. So, I mean, I think this kind of answers our last question, which was like, maybe it's not a good type of game for our group. And I would say it is a good type of game for our group.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
With the right rules and everything in place, we had a blast. So,
yeah.
I think the big difference is like Skull... You only had the four cards in your hand, three roses and a skull, and everybody has the same. Whereas with this game, you had no idea what's in anybody else's hand. Like, I mean, there was a round where Eric played and he said he had like cheese or something and it was two contraband.
Yeah. Two like, crossbows.
Yeah. And he said it was cheese. So like the fact that you could and nobody knows and you just have to like go off of what they're saying or how they're trying to bribe you or not.
The only time you know what they're taking is if they take from the discard pile.
Yeah,
other
exactly.
than that, like you never know.
So I feel like it's just way easier to bluff. And Skull, it didn't feel so much like bluffing as it felt like just a weird version of like name that tune where someone just gets down like I can name that tune in one note. Like bullshit, do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, like this was much more baked into the game and I think it really helped like our group who maybe doesn't naturally go to bluffing.
Yeah, I could see taking this even, you know, those few rare occasions where we get to have people actually come play with this. Like I could see this being one of our like larger group games too. Like I feel like with more people it would just be more fun because you would have more personalities like that you don't know, like, are they bluffing or are they not? Like, no, I really enjoyed it and we definitely play it again. And
what's the max player count on it?
Five. I thought it was 3 to 5.
Yeah, 3 to 5. The community says it's best with 5.
Yeah, I would see that. The more people kind of, the more interaction. Mm-hmm. I would say.
Although I feel like with 3, it was fine.
That's a key thing is a lot of time these 5-person games and 6-person games aren't very fun with 3, which we find a lot, but...
And that was the case with Skulls.
I don't know if Skulls would be good with more than 3. But even like some of our like strategy games and just anything with a higher player count tends to be built more around that player count. And it's playable with 3, but not always great with 3. And this one I thought was great with just the 3 of us. So.
Yep. I thought they were super easy to teach. The one thing I forgot, obviously, was to tell you guys, like, hey, if you have the most of one good, I think I mentioned it sort of, but I didn't go over, like
how many points they were worth. Like, hey, this is...
But I think that's fine, because I think you mentioned the important part. We could have looked at the thing. It's one of those, you kind of have to play it a bit to then get kind of a feel for, like, how much things are really worth. And anytime there's money and math involved, it just takes some like feeling it out kind of.
Yeah, I wonder, though, if it would end up being kind of like with the Spartacus, too. Like, do you then just end up choosing your strategy? Like, how when we play Spartacus, I always want the most gladiators, you know, versus slaves.
Yeah, I think this one, because that one, you go into it knowing, like, I want the most gladiators. Mm-hmm. Whereas this one, your strategy is kind of like, what do you get in your hand?
That's true.
Like, what are you going to try and play for? Like, at that last couple rounds, I was counting up. I was looking to see, like, how many cards you guys had.
Which is why you took my chicken.
Yeah, which is why, like, I wanted your chickens, because I knew I could take the chicken king.
And I wanted my contraband in, so I was willing to give you my chicken.
And that's why I took your cheese, too.
Yep. So, and I think the only rule, like, oddity that we had was the... when you made the bribery right. with Eric for him to search my bag, but then I tried to bribe Eric not to search my bag. And it was kind of a, because the whole honor amongst thieves rule, it was which one do you honor? Because if you honored my bribe, then you're not honoring her bribe. But right. the rule says you have to honor your bribe because it's the same turn. And that was the only kind of like, I think the only rule conflict that we had the whole game.
Yeah. And so we played it out with, I honored my original bribe with BP and did not take Kiwi's bribe. So,
yeah.
And fun factor.
Two thumbs up.
Oh, yeah. I had a blast.
Yeah. I think this might be our most just kind of purely fun game that we played. Mm-hmm. Like not necessarily from gaminess, but from just sort of interactions and laughing the whole game. I mean, it was Camel Cup was up there, but
it's true.
This was another one that just sort of, it seemed like, we were just laughing and having fun the whole time.
Yep.
Would you play it again?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I would actually consider putting it in our collection.
Yep.
Yeah, I would agree. It'd be a really good sort of family game or people mm-hmm. who aren't necessarily hardcore gamers mm-hmm. that just want to pull something out and play it without having to worry about explaining heavy rules and things like that.
Yeah, I totally concur with that comment in that I feel like with pandemic, it's a game where you could bring people in, but this has that competitive aspect. But it also isn't like too strategy-wise. Like you don't have to, you know, worry about, again, you know, being very mechanic heavy or anything. It really is just about having fun and, you know, just kind of going with the cards that you're dealt versus trying to be like super. I just think of the Yokohama guy, right? Like I'm trying to go on this path and. How am I going to
completely
crush you guys?
Yeah.
You made that one decision that messed up my turn, and now I have to spend the next 15 minutes thinking of a new thing to maximize my awesomeness.
So I think this avoids all of that, but still could appeal, again, to people who aren't super into board games. Because,
but a little more competitive.
Yeah, as opposed to a cooperative.
Right. It's also really good for new people who are more competitive because, you know, heavy strategy games... you're going to lose to somebody who's played it before because they've played it before.
Right.
Yeah. Which can be very frustrating if you're competitive. Whereas games like this, you know, it's kind of equal shot. You pick up the rules really quick. I felt like it had a good flow. Like even just playing the first round, we all just got it really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Which is good because then you can get into it and then it's a fair game for everyone, even if some people haven't played it before.
Yeah, I mean, the complexity on Board Game Geek is only a 1.66 out of 5.
Yep, which I think is interesting because that's like rules-wise, but then complexity can skyrocket depending on your group and how good they are at lying and bluffing.
Yep.
Right, yeah.
It's like you could put more thought into this than, Agricola if your group is really good at lying and you're trying to figure out what they're doing.
Yeah, which
yeah.
Exactly.
Oh, that sounds fun. Well, maybe in the future, I mean, you could add to the role play of where you bring this out and everybody has to dress up as their favorite Robin Hood character.
What?
I don't know.
And then you actually have to smuggle it by. So you're just turning this into a LARP.
Yeah, it's a giant Sheriff of Nottingham LARP. It's just a bunch of people with like Nerf crossbows under their cloak.
I love it. Although I never get dressed up. So
wheels of Baby Bell cheese that they're trying to get in. You're like feeling the bag on Christmas and like shaking it. They're like,
use the dog instead of the chickens.
Yeah, there's a bag full of dogs.
In this episode, we compared a couple of bluffing games. So if you want to call out our bluff, please reach out to us either on the Twitters, Instagram, or email. Our Twitter handle is at First Turncast, FirstTurnCast. And email is firstturntabletop@gmail.com. We look forward to hearing any comments, questions, or recommendations. The memo that I was supposed to
get. Yeah, 2 days ago, I said, hey, are we going to have BP set up a history lesson? And he said, no, don't bother her. We'll make her make it up on the spot.
Well, you're a jerk.
Oh, we brought camels to Arizona. Camels are like...
Why is that your impression of BP?
Oh, you should see the hand gestures that go with impressions of
it. There's a lot of hands swinging about.
Oh, my camels.
I got 3 bushels of apples to add to the 4 bushels of apples I already got.
You look like a shifty lot, both of you.
That's possible. I do grow apples.
Squawk, 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 squawk.
Get them chickens away from me apples. It just looks like your standard, maybe it's Swiss, a little bit of cheddar, perhaps. Mostly looks like Swiss, though. Whichever one's got the holes in it.
What sort of Australian cheese are you carrying?
I just got me some chickens.
Very quiet chickens you have there.
Quack! All right, welcome to Merchant Nottingham Border Patrol here. Line up, make your declarations, make sure you fill out your sheet there.
Welcome to Nottingham, Australia.
It's right outside Darwin. Your chickens are right quiet, yeah?
Don't you hear them squawking?
No, mate, I don't.
I'm not going to make a chicken noise.
I demand that you make a chicken noise right now.
Stand by.
Nope, you ain't using your phone there.
You know doesn't make chicken noises? Pepper.
That's right.
You're going to make me make a chicken noise.
I made a chicken noise. Eric made a chicken noise. You get to make a chicken noise.
I can't have an Let's electronic.
Hear chicken noise. Do
That's an awfully sickly chicken. Even if they are legit, I don't think she should be selling that to the public.
Not sure I want you bringing these sickly chickens in here. You get the other chickens sick. We'll have a chicken pox.